You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you want to know who's hot and who's not, you follow the money. That's what they say in Washington, the town where lots of money is dispensed each year in the federal budget. That's why when President Bush signed into law this year's budget, experts were picking it apart, looking to see who got more, who got less. It's almost like who's been naughty, who's been nice. It's no wonder that the budget gets dished out this time of the year. It's loaded with pork for special pet projects in lawmakers' home states. But it also shows the priorities that Congress and the president put on the direction the government will take by increasing or decreasing the amounts from the year before. So who are the winners and losers this year? Well, in our interest, we're going to focus on science and technology. And in that area, it's sort of a mixed bag. NASA, the space agency, got a big boost, more than even the administration had asked for, mainly to go towards the president's proposed return to the moon. But among the losers is the National Science Foundation, facing a cut of about 2% in its research programs, 10% in education spending. That's down 10% for education. They got less money than the president asked for. And if for full disclosure, in this program, Science Friday receives some NSF funding. So what does all this mean in the real world? Joining me now are two observers of science policy, Dan Greenberg, author of Science, Money, and Politics in Washington. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks, Ira. Glad to be with you.
He's also a contributing editor to The Lancet. Maxine Singer is the president emeritus of the Carnegie Institute of Washington, and among many other hats, is the chair of the Committee on Science, Engineering, and Public Policy at the National Academies of Sciences in Washington. Thank you, Dr. Singer, for joining us today.
Thank you, Ira.
Let me start with you, a many-decade observer. Dan, what do you think about the ups and downs of science in this budget?
Well, I think this is the beginning of austerity for the American scientific community. We also have to recognize a paradox. It gets more money than any other country, even more than the Western European countries put together for science and technology. But the science is based upon, it has kind of a metabolism that calls for growth every year. And even though we start from a very, very large base, the growth has now gone out of the system because of the deficits that the administration faces. And we find the National Science Foundation, which every year has gotten a respectable increase, is actually going backwards. The National Institutes of Health is getting a minor increase, but it probably won't even cover for inflation. So I think that accounts for all the gloomy scientists that we're seeing around Washington. And I think they're gloomy with good reason. They have been brought up in a system that had the resources for taking risks, for doing new things, for bringing in lots of young new people and equipment and things of that sort. And the future looks relatively bleak compared to what it has been over the past decade and a half or so.
You know, because I'm surprised to hear you say that, because you usually say it's business as usual a lot of times when we talk about what's going on in Congress.
Well, I think in the past the scientific community has cried wolf many, many times. The budgets always had an increase, but never as much of an increase as they wanted. Science, let's face it, is insatiable. You can always have another project and have another oceanographic ship. You can open up another laboratory. But things are different now. We've had heavy federal deficits totaling now about $750 billion over the past 2 years, and the administration has instructed all of the agencies to plan for hard times. I think that realism calls for doing that. It's a new game now.
Dr. Singer, something different this year?
Definitely something different. I'm one of those people who is always calling for more money for science, one of the people that Dan described. But I think what I would stress right now is the imbalance in the funding of science, which is not necessarily tied to increases. And in particular, the National Science Foundation, which has been the primary funder for the physical sciences, that's physics and earth science, astrophysics, chemistry, has not been getting increases like those of the NIH. And what has resulted over a long period of years is a terrible imbalance in the funding of those sciences. It isn't only current research which suffers then, it's also the future, because one of the great strengths of the U.S. scientific endeavor is the linkage between research and education. So if research in the physical sciences goes down, then education also goes down. And in some years in the future, when we look to find a lot of people who've been trained in the physical sciences, we won't find them. At least we won't find them within the U.S. population. We would have to look abroad. So I would stress this imbalance that we have as a really important element in this current budget, and the current budget exacerbates that.
Mm-hmm. Where would you say the budget for education, do you think, Dr. Singer, is where it's been hurt the most?
Well, I think that the NSF has a total decrease in its funding of about minus 0.3%, which if you then account for inflation is a much bigger number, particularly because inflation for science is usually bigger than the a larger number than the general inflation. But the as I understand what's been appropriated for education, it's down about 10%. And there's kind of a seesaw going on as to whether the science education, science and mathematics education, ought to be funded in the National Science Foundation or in the Department of Education. But as I understand it, there's a net decrease in the funds for that. Mm-hmm. And in addition, the funds for research have, as I already indicated, a very direct impact mm-hmm. on higher education in the physical sciences.
Dan, NASA gets a huge increase in its funding.
Well, it gets a huge increase, but if you look at it in fine detail, I think some serious questions arise. The great triumphs of NASA that have taken place in recent years have been in the scientific program, planetary exploration, and those marvelous Mars landers that sent back those spectacular pictures. Those programs are going to be cut in behalf of putting more money into the manned space programs, particularly in reviving the cumbersome and falling apart shuttle program. NASA is tied to man in space, though the great results from space, from the space program, have not come from man in space. And frankly, politics and the public are pretty well bored with seeing people tumbling around inside of space cabins. But they go on and on with it. Now the president has committed NASA to a landing on the moon, returning to the moon, with the next step probably being, though there's no firm commitment for that, going to Mars. NASA is already budgeting, rerouting money following the presidential directive. And that brings us, I mean, Maxine is absolutely right about the imbalances. They keep getting worse. Another imbalance that I think is should be a cause for worry is that the Defense Department is once again hogging the largest part of the federal R&D budget. During the Cold War, it was up to about 75%, then it gradually receded, and I think when Clinton left office, it was about 50-50%. Now the defense is up to about 57% of all federal R&D spending. And defense used to support a lot of science in universities. That money is been drying up in recent years. It's now most of the defense R&D money, the D for development, is going into weapons development. That's another loss for American science. So I used to criticize these people for crying wolf. They did it for a long, long time. But I think now the situation has radically changed.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can go to the phones. Got a few phone calls in here. Let's go to Mark in Southampton, New York. Hi, Mark.
Greetings.
Hi.
I just would hope that the guests would not lose sight of the fact that probably one of the a feeling of the administration as well as many citizens, we look for science to be picked up in the private sector and propagate from there. I used, with your screener, I used the Ansari X Prize as an example. We witnessed this fall the first private spacecraft, the first spacecraft of an N number, for that matter. Private sector is willing and able to move forward in science, whether it's space science, bioscience, or energy. And we can't possibly expect the federal government to fund every pet project and the will of the scientific community when we have to look to the private sector, and this year was a perfect example that the private sector is capable of doing so. And that's my comment.
Mm-hmm. Maxine, any comment?
Yes, indeed. In one sense, the caller is exactly right that we do look to the private sector to pick up on things. But I think what the caller is missing is that the fundamental work that leads to a point of new knowledge where the private sector can take over has, in our country and in most countries, always been the business of the government in one way or another. In centuries ago, it was the king who fostered that. Now it's our governments. And the leaders of American business are the first to talk about that, to say that without the increase in fundamental knowledge that federal money brings, there wouldn't be the new opportunities for business. So I think that's important. That's one of the reasons why at the academies, we've always stressed what we call the science and technology budget, the budget which impacts an increase in new knowledge and the beginnings of new technology, rather than the R&D, the research and development, which is overwhelmingly supporting development of things, primarily for the military. So I think the caller needs to pay attention to that. We would not have the private venture into space if we hadn't had many decades of work supported by the government, laying down the fundamental requirements for that and developing some of the technologies.
Dan, any comment?
Well, I think furthermore, in recent years, industry has backed away from basic research. We used to have some really splendid basic research laboratories run by industry, Bell Labs, for example. They don't do very much basic research anymore. So the funding provided by the government becomes all the more important.
According to the budget, and I'm reading some quotes from Chemical and Engineering News that went over the budget. It says the Department of Energy will receive nearly $23 billion for fiscal 2005. That's $300 million less than the president's request, but $1 billion more than last year's appropriation. The Office of Science gets $3.6 billion, roughly $200 million more than requested, and $100 million more than last year. All science offices, programs there at the Department of Energy receive increases. To be expected, now, you know, with the president, and now the president appointed a new energy cabinet-level position today, the Secretary of Energy. Sam Bodman, who said he's going to carry on the president's desires to try to make America energy independent and other things that the president wants to do.
Well, the president, once again, the president is reiterating the theme of energy independence from domestic sources. And this then gets us into the environmental sensitivities that blocked his aims in his first administration. A great deal of the money that goes to DOE is also for weapons programs. The physics community, I think, has a legitimate beef, and that is that while NIH has prospered, budget doubled over 5 years just recently, the Department of Energy not only lost the superconducting supercollider, its dream machine back in 1993, but its budget has been essentially stagnant in the physical sciences. This feeds through the system and sends signals to young people when they're contemplating scientific careers, if at all they're contemplating scientific careers, and they see the money is not in the physical sciences, and they look to NIH or they look to getting an MBA and making a lot of money quickly.
All right, I'd like to add that there is one very bright mark for the Department of Energy budget, and that is that the Congress provided no money for the development of brand new nuclear weapons, the so-called bunker buster that had been talked about. I consider that a bright spot in that budget.
I'll second that. Right?
We're talking with Maxine Singer and Dan Greenberg about the 2005 budget this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I mentioned that President Bush had appointed Sam Bodman. Of course, he's only nominated him. He has to be what's advised consent, as they say in Congress. He can only be nominated, has to be okayed by Congress. 1-800-989-8255. What's interesting about this appointment, just as a, because it just happened today, is that many people in the energy industry never heard of this guy, so to speak. There's a story on the wires that says one energy and industry lobbyist who said, Sam, who? I've never heard of this guy. Was virtually an unknown in Washington energy policies, even though he is a scientist, I guess, by training, has a PhD, I think, in science. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Yes, good.
Certainly not well known in Washington scientific circles, let's say that, but that's need not reflect on the performance he'll put in.
Well, if the lobbyists don't know who he is, maybe that is a good thing. 1-800-9- They'll find out quickly. Well, 1-800-99-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can go to the phones here and get a few calls in. Let's go to Michael in Guilford, Connecticut. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
My question is, I mean, I know that everything in the budget is linked, but do you think that politicians, congressmen, and senators kind of link the idea of science in one big category so that if they give money to NASA, they consider it in their mind giving it to science? And so that may weigh any kind of misguided NASA programs, like, in my opinion, the space station, would have a negative impact on funding the Science Foundation. And then my other question is, if that is the case, then does the foundation have a lobby group to kind of try to, you know, dispel that?
Dan, go ahead. Well, Maxine, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to jump in. To some extent, the caller is correct. But to another, it's not quite the case. And for a variety of reasons. I think, for example, most people in Congress feel very strongly about the support of research that can improve health. And it's because they're human beings, and they themselves have health problems, and people in their families do, as do their constituents. The second thing that differentiates sciences for different people in Congress has to do with the amount of money that different sciences bring to different districts. So a district which has a big medical school in it and is getting millions and millions of dollars a year through NIH grants has a very particular view about the value of the NIH budget, and similarly for people who have companies or universities that work in the space program, for example. So I think there's a fair amount of differentiation that goes on. What's really lacking, I think, is a broad kind of look at a thoughtful look at the policy overall, and for the Congress and the President to some extent, the White House, the OMB, to look at where we need research. And to do that, you have to have the goals in mind of what you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of thoughtful look at science funding has not been going on.
All right, we're going to take a break and maybe get a comment from Congressman Vern Ehlers, who's the House Science Committee, will be with us to talk about what he thinks of the budget. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the short break. I'm Ira Flatto, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking this hour about science funding, the big bill that was the congressional bill that was passed, and what is in that congressional bill, the budget for science. Joining me this hour is Dan Greenberg, author of Science, Money, and Politics in Washington, and Maxine Singer, who is chair of the Committee on Science, Engineering, and Public Policy at the National Academies of Sciences in Washington. Joining us now is Congressman Vern Ehlers, a Republican of Michigan. Representative Ehlers is a member of the House Science Committee. He is also a chairman of the Subcommittee on Technology, Environment, and Standards. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I understand you're very dismayed about the budgetary problems that are with science funding in this budget.
Well, especially with the National Science Foundation, where the funding was actually reduced this year over last year, in spite of the fact that the president had been good enough to recommend a $227 million increase, the Congress, in its infinite wisdom, actually reduced the budget and well below the past year's level and far, far below what the president requested. The NASA came out pretty well, and NIH always manages to do pretty well on its own. But the National Science Foundation, every year I fight very, very hard for additional funding for that, and I would guess that over my tenure in the Congress, I've probably added cumulatively about $1 billion to the budget of the NSF.
What is it about Congress that you think they don't get about science?
Well, that's the difficulty. In this case, it was not. I don't want to blame the Congress per se. I want to blame the process and the process of an omnibus budget bill.
Uh-huh.
What happens in the Congress if we cannot get the individual appropriations bills passed by October 1 when they're necessary? Then eventually all the leftover bills get tossed into a big bill called an omnibus bill. And then lots of decisions are made by very few people sitting in back rooms away from public scrutiny. And that's precisely what happened here. I'm sure at some point they said, boy, we just don't have enough money in this particular category. We're going to have to cut the NSF. And this decision is made by people who don't necessarily have a vested interest in NSF. The last year we had the same problem with the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, where at the last minute in the omnibus, their budget was cut $39 million and left them high and dry for the year. So I have sent a letter. I'm in the process of sending a letter to President Bush asking him to tell the Congress he will not sign any more omnibus bills. I think we simply have to do the hard work of doing it bill by bill, and if we can't reach agreement, we just keep plugging until we do.
Mm-hmm. Maxine Singer said earlier that she thought that we needed a more thoughtful overlook of all science policy in general. It was sort of lacking when anybody comes up with a science policy.
Well,
agree
yes.
With that?
In fact, when I first came to Congress, Newt Gingrich gave me the assignment of writing a national science policy, which I did. The problem is to get that followed, and mine was just a beginning effort at it. We need much more work in that. But the real problem is the allocation process in the appropriations bills. At the beginning of the year, the chairman of Appropriations Committee and the House leadership allocate to each subcommittee how much money they're getting. And the National Science Foundation, unfortunately, is in the same budget as the Veterans Administration and Housing and Urban Development. And you can imagine when a vote comes up that puts extra money for VA, for the veterans, against the National Science Foundation, the politics are clear that the Veterans Administration will get more money. I have talked to Tom DeLay about this and others in leadership over the years. And this year, Mr. DeLay has joined me in an effort to develop a separate appropriations category for science and technology with its own appropriations subcommittee. And that would remove the problem of putting NSF in a battle every year with veterans and housing. That would be a step forward, I think, but then, of course, we still have to make certain we get enough of an allocation for that subcommittee.
And hope it doesn't get lumped in again with another omnibus bill.
Yes, although I think there's enough unanimity about science and science funding in the Congress, especially in the House, that if we can get the separate subcommittee and we get a decent allocation for it, I think we can come up with a good bill without too much trouble.
It's interesting when we're talking about the cut in education. Your own statement, I'm reading from your statement that was released by our office, where it says, we cannot hope to fight job loss to international competition without a well-trained and educated workforce.
Absolutely.
I mean, is this like a no-brainer, as my kids would say, you know?
Well, it absolutely is, but you have to recognize we're dealing with a political system where the members of Congress feel a lot of pressure from other groups in addition to education. There are many needs in society, and every year the appropriations battle is a tough battle because there are people fighting for the groups they think are the most downtrodden or the most in need of help or most in need of additional health care and so forth. And there are not too many of us who will go to the mat for science. And I shudder to think what will happen, what happened before I was there and what will happen if I retire, because we don't have too many science aficionados and advocates in the Congress at the moment.
Well, Congressman, thank you for taking time to join us today.
I'm pleased to do it, and I hope out there you will find a lot of listeners who are interested in improving math and science education, which I am, and also some who are willing to run for Congress and get involved in the political hurly-burly and advocate for science.
If they wanted to write letters, where would be the best place to send them?
Well, it's an indefinite period right now because we're in the process of switching appropriation committee chairs. But certainly the Speaker of the House, also to Mr. DeLay, Tom DeLay, who is the majority leader, and encourage him in his effort to set up a separate subcommittee. And after the first of the year, we should know who the new appropriations chair is. That's a powerful position. But also everyone can write their own congressman and say, I really think it's terrible that the NSF got cut this year. See what you can do to reverse it next year. And that's precisely what I'm trying to do.
Congressman, thanks again. Have a happy holiday.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday, too.
Thank you. Congressman Vern Ehlers, a Republican of Michigan, who is the chairman of the Subcommittee on Environment Standards and Technology of the House Science Committee. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Listening patiently is Dan Greenberg and Maxine Singer. Maxine is fighting an uphill battle.
Well, clearly it's an uphill battle, and Congressman Ehlers is one of the champions. I was glad that he mentioned the effort he made in the early 90s to put together a science policy. We were coming out of the Cold War, and a lot of the motivations that framed our science policy, had framed it for a long time, had changed. But the fact is that it's changed again now, so I would urge Congressman Ehlers to think about it again. It's changed because we know now that we operate for science and technology and business in a very global arena. And many other countries are competing with the United States for excellence and not only quality but also quantity of scientific output, China and other places. And I think that this is something we need to pay attention to be sure that we don't lose our preeminence, certainly in some areas that we choose to sustain for being the world's leaders. So I would hope that he would do that again. He's done it in the past to good effect.
Dan, any comment?
Well, what strikes me, Ira, is that a lot of the matters that we've been discussing this afternoon remain beneath the threshold of public notice. And what that brings to my mind is the question of what is the scientific community doing, which knows these problems best of all, to bring them to public attention. And I would say, by and large, not very much. We didn't see science at all, as far as, you know, carried forth by scientists, figuring very much in the recent presidential election, except on the stem cell issue. But on the other issues of the healthy support of science, of the management of science, the imbalance question that Maxine raised before, nothing at all was said to the public. So I think that if there's no resonance in the public on these important issues, a large part of the blame, I think, belongs in the scientific community, because it has gotten accustomed to being well supported by the federal government. It tries to play the bipartisan game, saying we want to be friends with everybody in Congress. And as a result, we are now heading into this long period of austerity that is going to be quite harmful for science, and it's hard to see there's any way out of it.
Talking about, let me just give an idea, and then Maxine will jump in. We're talking about science funding this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Maxine Singer?
Yes, I'd like to disagree with Dan. That criticism is one that he and others have made for a long time, that scientists have not gotten as involved as they should. But I think that that has changed enormously over the last 4 or 5 years. More and more scientists are visiting their representatives in Congress to talk about general issues as well as very specific issues, and not just stem cells. There's a very organized effort in the physical sciences now, as well as in the biological sciences. And with respect to partisan activities, there was an organization which was called Scientists and Engineers for Change. I and I think something like 25 of my colleagues around the country went and gave talks about scientific issues at various sites around the country. It was a beginning. It wasn't that extensive. But nevertheless, it was something quite new for us, and I think Dan ought at least to give us a little bit of credit for doing that. It's even gotten us in some trouble because there was an interview with the president's science advisor, Jack Marburger, that was published in Science Magazine a few weeks ago, in which he said that because of that kind of activity, scientists were going to marginalize themselves because, in fact, it was all on one side. So I guess, you know, you win. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, in one sense.
Well, I usually agree with Maxine, but I think Scientists and Engineers for Change typifies the political timidity of scientists. I'm not aware that there was a candidate named Change in the last election. This was really Scientists and Engineers for Kerry. Every one of them was for Kerry, as far as I know, and I looked into it a bit. But they wouldn't come out and say that because, again, they're going to play the bipartisan game. I think scientists have to recognize that science has become a political subject. It is heavily dependent upon public resources, and the way you get public resources is by playing the political game. The delegations that go and visit their congressman, I can't say that's not useful, but I would say that the results so far have been paltry.
Are you looking for them to take to the streets, Dan?
Well, I don't think they have to take to the streets, but I would have them take to the election route, ring doorbells.
What about raising simple news conference? Well, you know, if you see the NSF budget come out now, you don't like it, you call a news conference. Say, you know, we've got to.
I would say that's one important way to go, and there have been a few minor protests from the scientific community. Of course, it's just fresh. The budget isn't all that old. But scientists basically are very, very politically backward and timid, and they're paying the price for it now.
You just can't play all corners at the same time. That's your advice to them.
Well, my advice to them is go political. The Congress does not pay attention to the National Rifle Association because the National Rifle Association is full of wisdom. It's full of money and votes and political trouble, and therefore it gets the attention of the Congress.
All right. There you have the last bit of wisdom for today, because we've run out of time. thank you. It's interesting. Dan Greenberg, author of Science, Money, and Politics. He's certainly been around for at least for four decades, as long as I've been watching. Also, Washington contributing editor to The Lancet, Maxine Singer, President Emeritus of the Carnegie Institution, and among other hats that she wears, is the chair of the Committee on Science, Engineering, and Public Policy of the National Academies in Washington. Thank you for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Larry.
You'll have a good weekend and happy holidays. Our program is produced by Ned Heist, Charles Berquist, and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Our interns are Corey Binns and Abby Leonard. And if you'd like to write to us, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We make educational materials. Science Friday's Kids Connection is there, free. Click on the Teachers button. Teachers can download the curriculum we make. Also, you can listen to back editions of Science Friday on your iPod player or on Real Audio. Also, other links to all of our topics. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.